So this second reading that we've heard is a vision that was given, which showed all these people who'd suffered so much in this world, who'd been through such a terrible time in history, comforted. There was a redemption. They gathered finally to God. They're dressed in white. They're clean. They're not hungry anymore. They're not suffering anymore. Their suffering is over. And the passage was written at a time when the saints were going through a great time of trial and trouble. And surely this vision was given to them by God as a comfort to remind them that what you see in this world is not all. This is the prelude. This is the beginning. That something lies beyond it, more glorious and worth waiting for and worth even suffering to enter. It's certainly true, isn't it, that I don't think there's anybody here in this room today, unless somebody wishes to correct me, who's been through cataclysmic times such as those that we've been thinking about this morning, and such as the times of terrible persecution that the early Christians experienced when this letter was written to them. This year we marked Kath Lawrence's passing. Many of you knew her, 103 years old. She was the last of the members of this church who actually was born during the First World War and had some personal first-hand experience, and certainly remembers the austerity and the poverty that was inflicted upon the nation as a result of the war. So we're now going past the period of living memory, and we have to be deliberate and purposeful about these things. It was a terrible, terrible time. A terrible time. And people are not really that sure sometimes if you ask them what all this bloodshed was all about. Why? We know that an archduke over in Austro-Hungary somewhere was assassinated. We know it was a little country called Serbia that various countries have been fighting over. And we know that there were alliances stacked between the great nations of the world. But it's still staggering for us to think, and for them to even conceive, that ahead of them lay not a war that would be last till Christmas, but a war that would consume 16 million lives. 20 million people devastatingly wounded. As has already been mentioned, 1 million British people killed. 1.5 million wounded, severely wounded. Think of the consequences. Think of the personal consequences of such conflict. They were shocked. The world was shaken. Shaken. What people believed was shaken. These people who went through the tribulations that we're reading about in Revelations, they went through unimaginably difficult times and needed to be comforted. Needed to be comforted. Here in this parish, we mentioned probably 500 people at that time. Many went to fight. 30 or so never returned. Say if there were 500 people, 100 of them were children, 100 of them were beyond fighting age. The 300 that are left are divided between men and women. 150 men of active service age, and 30 of them are killed. 28. Is that right? 26. Thank you. 26. 26 killed. And even those who did return, think of the effect on their families. Their lives have been changed. They've seen and experienced unimaginable things. How many people have heard testimony from people from those times who said, he never spoke about it? You have? So have I. He never spoke about it. Changed. Shaken. Utterly shaken. People who lost friends, colleagues, workmates, community shattered. And as I mentioned before, this chapel itself, this church, changed by the losses that people experienced. I was looking again through the church minutes, and I was seeing some of the events of that time. There was a man by the name of Reverend Lewis, who was the minister at the time. He came here in 1908. 1908, the church was growing and growing and growing. You read every time you look in the church records, young people are being baptized, giving their life to the Lord, being added to the church. The church was growing and growing. There was a time of great religious revival in the period preceding the First World War. There were 185, nearly 200 members of North Badley Baptist Church in a community of perhaps 500 or more people. And he oversaw this high point. What it must have been like to be the minister of the church as it just flourished and bloomed. But it was the crest of a wave. It was the crest of a wave which crashed on the beach of the First World War. And his ministry didn't outlive the war that everybody probably thought was going to last till Christmas and go and do your duty. Went on and on and on and on. And you can see in the minutes books this sort of depression beginning to rest on the notes. And the women at home and their children, after weeks and months and years, it took a long time for the soldiers' pay to come through, for the change. It all happened so suddenly. People were destitute. Thousands of people's livelihood, millions probably in this country, their livelihood was dependent on trade in Europe, and it stopped overnight. A wave of unemployment spread across Great Britain. There was no welfare. Starvation. People were facing starvation in this country as the U-boat circled the island. The Prince of Wales made an urgent appeal in the Times, saying, "At this present time of deep anxiety, we know it will be followed by one of the most considerable periods of distress amongst the people of this country and amongst those least able to bear it." And made an appeal for a fund to be raised. And I see in the church books, our weekly collections each month, each week. And then suddenly a huge collection was put aside by the church here and sent off to this fund as people around the country responded to what they could see was the war was reaching its people here at home. £3, 3 shillings, 6 pence. That's 5,000 or 6,000 pounds in modern money. And as I said before, from the period of Reverend Lewis, the decline, you look at the figures, the number of people attending church and members of the church, 185. By World War II, there was just 77 members here. And it went down. It continued to go down. And the decline, the shock waves, they just did not know what had hit them. The new world had arrived. The old world was being swept away. And the faith was shaken. You look in the minute books again through the First War. We must go and speak to so-and-so and so-and-so. They are not attending the communion. More and more people losing their confidence. Do I still believe? What do I believe? Numbers went down and down until at one point just 19 members. From 185, nearly 200 members, down to 19 members. Do you know how long it took before that curve began to change? It wasn't until 1990. 70 years. And that goes step by step with what we see happening in the British Empire generally, isn't it? The kind of collapse of the old order, the old ways. Britain had been this superpower. We beat Napoleon. And Napoleon had beaten the great German Reich that had lasted and ruled Europe for 1,000 years. We were the undisputed masters of the world. We owned a quarter of the world's land. A fifth of the world's population was under our dominions. As we mentioned before, here we are now. Here we are now. Everything has been shaken. Change comes. Change comes and shakes the world. Shakes people's lives. Shakes us individually. We have all perhaps had our own experience. The Queen spoke about her annus horribilis, the time when everything that can go wrong does go wrong. Where everything you thought you could rely on and is faithful and sound seems no longer to work. Where you cannot keep pace with change. You're overwhelmed. The world is changing. It has taken 70 years for faith to begin to rise again. To grow again. Based on a new set of understandings and a new set of principles coming through the tribulation. Because we have a vision. And you need a vision. You see, today is a time for remembering, isn't it? We're remembering the sacrifices and the losses. But we also need to remember this vision that we have. This vision that we've been given by God. This vision that this is not all that there is. Everything that is here will be shaken. But there's something unshakable. Beyond this place, there is a kingdom that will never fall, that will never fail. There's one whose rule is beyond all question or contradiction. A king who has given himself in absolute and perfect service, who reigns forever on the throne of God. A kingdom to which we are invited to come to his table, to eat and drink with him, to serve him in his temple, to rejoice with him in the everlasting kingdom. That's the vision. Though we might have to suffer much in this world, and things happen in this world, and this is a grim reminder of it, isn't it? There is peace, unending, that we can fix our eyes upon if we will just believe what God has said and shown us. I wonder how so many people manage to face their tribulations, face their trials, face their troubles without such a vision. Surely you despair. You become cynical and bitter. But there is a redemption. There is a hope. There is a future. Without such a vision, you fall as people have fallen, and in the end, you know, we will all fall. We will all fail. But do we know that the day is coming where we will be lifted up and we will be raised? And is our eye firmly fixed on that day? Do we have a hope, a living hope, and a future? The days we live in are peaceful. Isn't it wonderful? Isn't it wonderful that we live in such peaceful days? But we should always live with that in mind, that we have a sure and certain hope that should tribulation come, and when our trials come, whether they be individual and personal, and each will go through our hour of trial, or whether it be as a community, as churches, or as a nation, or the world itself, we have a future that gives us strength and courage and grace and hope and passion and generosity of spirit that keeps the soul. Imagine gaining the whole world and losing your soul. Wouldn't it be better rather to lose your life but save your soul? I don't know what happened at the end of Reverend Lewis's ministry, whether he left this place because he left before the end of the war heartbroken, but I saw the figures going down and the time, the great crest of... It's nice, isn't it, to be on the up, but going on the down, to find the grace to see things going down to still remain firm. To still hold faith. That's another thing. But the real question we have to ask is about ourselves. We all seem to find grace abounding when we're going up and things are going well. Do we have a vision that will hold us in tribulation and trouble and trial? In short, have you fixed your eyes firmly on Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith? He's alive and he lives forevermore. And we will be risen with him and reign with him, as this passage declares. Because when we fall, just to conclude, the truth is that we've all sinned. We remember those who've passed. But we've all sinned. Nobody's righteous. Nobody has a right to heaven. It's a gift. It's a gift. And we need one who has been prepared to lay down his life for his friends. One who will give himself for us. One who is a perfect sacrifice. A perfect sacrifice. And that's Jesus. He's prepared to lay down his life so that you might live and enter into the eternal kingdom. Greater love has no man was first and foremostly about Jesus, long before it went on the cenotaphs around this country. It's about him. Let us not forget him on a day like today. I believe the day will come where we will be gathered around the throne of which we've read, and some of these men will be there. They'll be there singing with you and I the same song, with the same heart and spirit. Salvation belongs to our God, who sits on the Lamb and to the throne. We will all fall, but he has raised us up, and we have life everlasting, so that we might serve him night and day in his temple, and he might spread his tent over us, and we will never hunger anymore and never thirst. The sun will not beat down upon us, nor any scorching heat, for the Lamb will be at the center of the throne, and he will be our shepherd and lead us to springs of living water, and will wipe away every tear. We've got one concluding song to sing, and after we finish singing, I'm going to ask June whether you'd help us by taking the wreath. And I've asked June to lead out with the wreath, and for us all to follow her.